Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We have a very special guest in store for you. He's considered one of the world's authorities on a very common and perplexing set of disorders. Fatigue and fibromyalgia plague innumerable individuals. They suffer from exhaustion, bodily aches and pains, and often baffling symptoms. But to the rescue of millions of these individuals comes a new book entitled The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution by one of the country's most well-informed authorities, most authoritative researchers and clinicians, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. Dr. Teitelbaum has a lot of credentials. He's trained conventionally. He's board certified in internal medicine. And he's also author of some books that you might already be familiar with, from Fatigue to Fantastic, also Pain-Free 1-2-3, Beat Sugar Addiction Now. And he has been all over the media. He's appeared on Good Morning America, CNN, The Dr. Oz Show, and Oprah. And so without further ado, let's introduce our guest, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. Dr. T, welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Nice having you aboard once again.
Great to be with you, Ron.
So, well, first of all, give us some definitions here. What is chronic fatigue syndrome? Just, you know, a lot of people are tired. Hey, I'm a little, you know, I'm a little knocked down. I work hard. I want to go sit in the easy chair and watch Monday Night Football. Does that qualify as chronic fatigue syndrome?
Nope. Qualifies for being human nowadays.
Okay.
Because we have an energy crisis going on. Half of the calories have been wiped out of our diet and food processing with added sugar. We've got lost one-third of our sleep in the last 130 years or so. People don't exercise. They don't get the sunshine. They're running faster. So it's normal to be a bit tired. But what we're talking about is an energy crisis that's so severe that people basically blow a fuse. When the energy level goes to a certain critical point, a circuit breaker in the brain called the hypothalamus goes offline. And at that point, you can't sleep even though you're exhausted. You have horrible insomnia. And when you get that paradox of horrible insomnia despite being exhausted combined with widespread pain, because muscles are like a spring, they need energy to relax, to stretch the muscle. When it doesn't have energy, it gets locked in a shortened position. Think writer's cramp or rigor mortis, and they hurt. So when you get that, can't sleep even though you're exhausted, widespread pain, and brain fog, you're in a whole other category of fatigue, and those symptoms are what define chronic fatigue syndrome and its painful cousin, fibromyalgia.
Okay, so are these two distinct entities? Why lump them together? CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome, and FMS, fibromyalgia syndrome.
Most people have one, have the other. People ask me what's the difference, and I say that if somebody with a disease goes into their infectious disease doctor office, the specialist will diagnose them with chronic fatigue syndrome. If they walk out the door, go down the hall to the rheumatologist's office, they'll come out with a diagnosis of fibromyalgia. Most people, about 80% who have one, have the other. There are some cases of pure fatigue with no pain. Those tend to be underlying viral infections, autonomic dysfunction. So most people, they're one and the same condition.
And what's the prevalence of these conditions?
Well, they're growing. They used to be quite rare, but now they've gone up to about 2-4% of the population. Three-quarters of people who have it are women, which is very common in diseases that affect immune function. You think of rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, multiple sclerosis, diseases of the immune system that affect women. So we're looking at upwards of 12 million Americans who suffer unnecessarily with these conditions because they're very treatable now.
And you have an interesting personal odyssey where you encountered some of these very symptoms as a young physician. I've had many occasions to spend time with you and have sit down and have a meal with you, and you've discussed your own personal experience with us. Why don't you share that with our audience?
Yeah, people often ask me, what's a nice doctor like you doing in a disease like this? So it's and I got into it the old-fashioned way. I was in medical school and came down with what I call the drop-dead flu. And 6 weeks later, I could still barely get out of bed and function. And I had to drop out of medical school, which for me, you know, being a good Jewish boy whose whole life is geared to being a physician and a healer.
Yeah, that's really huge.
That was the end of my life. So, but I had no choice. And my dad was dead. I was basically couldn't do work anymore. So no work study, no loans, no scholarships. I was homeless, sleeping in the parks. And it's funny. It's as if like the universe put a homeless medical school sign on my park bench.
Wow.
I met herbalists, healers, physicians, osteopaths, chiropractors, naturopaths, so many different branches of the healing arts. And each of them would just teach me the pieces that I needed to know that I cobbled together to get myself well. And I was surprised when I got well. I was able to get back in medical school, did my medicine, got honors, and did very well. And but it certainly caught my attention because the doctors, when I had it, they had no clue. So they figured, well, the tests are normal. He must be depressed.
Right. Yeah, that's a common default, you know, is when they can't find anything specifically wrong with you and all the tests are normal, they say perhaps you're someone who might benefit from an antidepressant.
Yes, of course. I mean, Ron, you and I all know that if we don't know what's wrong with the person's crazy, right? Well, I mean, that's such a standard medical approach to it. It's pretty pathetic. So it's, for those of you out there who have been abused by doctors who did that, by the way, here's how you tell if you're depressed. I'll ask you the question, are you depressed? If you answer yes, you're depressed. If you answer no, you're not depressed. Studies have shown that that one simple question is as reliable as a Beck Depression Inventory and all these other fancy scales.
I sometimes get a variation on the theme. Patients say, I'm depressed because I feel so lousy. Who wouldn't be depressed?
Well, then the next question is, do you have many interests? If the answer is yes, I have 1,000 interests, but I'm frustrated. I have no energy to do them. You're not depressed.
Right.
Depressed people, if you ask, you have many interests, it's like, no. So either of those two questions will make the distinction. But it's interesting because if you look at the blood testing, for example, in people who are depressed, morning cortisol, that's the stress hormone levels, are routinely elevated.
Mm-hmm.
Where in people with CFS and fibromyalgia, they're on the low side of normal, quite different. And the biochemistry in many, many places is very different between CFS and depression. In our study, we found that 1 out of 8 people who had CFS and fibromyalgia were also depressed, as opposed to being frustrated over being too ill to function.
So there can be concordance between those things. The depression, you know, may go hand in hand with a physical ailment. That's not impossible.
Absolutely. If people have widespread cancer, not all of them are going to be depressed, even though they're very ill, but some will be depressed. But can you imagine if somebody came in with metastatic cancer and the doctor said, oh, well, you're depressed. No treatment for you, no disability insurance for you, no health insurance. It's just depression. And the insurers went, yay, they're depressed, you know, and cut them off.
Wow.
That's what happens in fibros. It's awful. It gets abusive.
Wow. So you strike me as someone who has boundless energy. You're constantly embarking on new projects. You're full of life and great enthusiasm, and you really love what you do. So, you know, how do you reconcile this state of complete exhaustion and burnout with your current self?
Well, there's a side benefit. You know, it's a funny thing in natural medicine versus in pharmaceutical medicine, you take most medications, they talk about the side effects. And in natural medicine, most often what you have are side benefits. You know, you take this curcumin or curcumin for pain, and you get the side benefits of less Alzheimer, less cancer, you know, as well as less inflammation. One of the side benefits of having the illness, and it was a really big one, was it forced me to take the time to get to know myself and to get a sense of who I was and who I am, as opposed to who I thought I should be to get approval and all these other things. So it forced me into taking the time to become whole and authentic. And that becomes a very, very, very big step on the way to your body getting more energy. Because if you're trying to get well so you can go back to a life you hate that made you sick in the first place, ain't gonna happen. But if you're finding what feels good to you, what excites you, like Joseph Campbell said, following your bliss, your body, your psyche will trust you to free up the energy.
So your body will align with purpose, with direction, with enthusiasm, and harmony with, you know, your own destiny.
Yes. it's you know, being yourself, being authentic, and it's all the difference in the world to health, because all illness has a mind-body component. I don't care if you're talking about people who have repressed anger and frustration or the increased risk of heart attack, or if you're talking about people who can't say no, you know, and set their boundaries, who then get fibromyalgia. Each illness has its own psychodynamic.
Right, but we don't want to go too far down that that rabbit hole, because clearly this is not merely a psychosomatic illness, as has sometimes been said of chronic fatigue syndrome. There are physical components, and you lay them out with a really cool mnemonic. You talk about the SHINE protocol. So lay that out for us, please.
Well, when you're talking about an energy crisis where you've blown a fuse called the hypothalamus, to restore energy production, it takes SHINE. And S stands for sleep. Because the hypothalamus, that circuit that goes offline, controls sleep, poor sleep, despite being exhausted, is a hallmark of this disease. So you need to take things. Now, like, there's natural remedies. My favorite is called the Revitalizing Sleep Formula, which is a mix of six herbs. You can go ahead and take some melatonin. The smell of lavender or even lavender capsules can be very helpful. Things, if your mind is wide awake at bedtime, often cortisol at night is too high, so ashwagandha and phosphatidylserine, things like Sleep Tonight. There's many things. And then I will add medications, but I'm very picky about the ones I use and how I dose them. All of those together, I will get people. I can count on my fingers how many people, and there's thousands and thousands I've treated that have not been able to get their 8 hours sleep a night and their fibromyalgia.
Well, to your previous point, you know, sleep is a very active process, and I've noticed that some of the patients that I've treated for fatigue and sleep disorders, when we treat some of their underlying problems, for example, we give them thyroid medication, which is considered to be a stimulant, and they actually sleep deeper because they have more energy to do the high energy, whatever, brain reshuffling and bodily repair that occurs during sleep.
Absolutely so. And in addition, when you get the thyroid, the restless leg syndrome will settle down. And for those of you out there whose legs are running a marathon at night and kicking your spouses all over the place while you're sleeping, sometimes called restless leg syndrome, it is not a REQUIP deficiency. It is an iron deficiency and magnesium deficiency and thyroid deficiency.
Very nice.
If you treat those three, very often the restless leg syndrome goes away.
And which brings us to the H in the SHINE protocol, which is?
Hormonal support. The hypothalamus, that circuit that goes offline, controls the pituitary and pretty much the entire hormone system. So it's not like destruction of the glands, because for the test to be abnormal around, most doctors don't realize that the normal range is based on what's called two standard deviations. They take 100 people and the 95 in the middle make up the normal range. So if I wanted a normal range for shoe sizes, it'd be, say, 4 to 13 would be the normal range. But that doesn't mean if I stick some gal in my size 13 shoes that it's going to fit them, or if I'm wearing their size 8 shoes that it's going to fit me. But the doctor will say, no, the tests are normal. Both of us would be fine. Even though I couldn't even get my toe in a size 8 shoe, the doctor would say, smack dab in the normal range. There's nothing wrong with my shoe. I'm crazy. So for thyroid, the way that you tell about thyroid issues, tired, achy, weight gain, cold intolerant. Sounds like you need a trial of bioidentical thyroid hormone until you see, and to see if it helps you. Adrenal, you have to be in the lowest 1 out of 200,000 people before the doctor will say your adrenal is low. It has to be so low that it literally can kill the person.
Yeah, that would be Addison's disease, and people literally, you know, they can die from it.
Yes, put a med alert on them, and bracelet the whole thing. But if it's under 6, they say it's Addison's disease. But if it's 6.1, they say you're fine. Most people run 18 in the morning, and the machine is only active to them 3-4 points. I've seen two tubes of blood on the same person, same time, where it comes back routinely 4 to 8 points apart.
Mm-hmm.
But 5.9 is deadly, and 6.1 is no problem, even if the person's bedridden. It's insane. So how do you tell if you need adrenal support, low blood pressure, dizzy when you stand, along with fatigue? But the main hallmark is irritability when hungry. If when you get hungry, it's like a light switch goes off and people got 3 minutes to feed you, or you will claw their eyes out. You need adrenal support.
And that has something to do with blood sugar stability, and that's because of the role of the adrenals in supporting optimal blood sugar, I guess, right?
Exactly. During stress, blood sugar gets burnt up more quickly, blood sugar drops, and the role of cortisol is to increase blood sugar so your body has what it needs during stress. When your blood sugar drops too low, it's the same as suffocating. If somebody comes between you and that Twinkie, It's like getting between a mama bear and her cub. You know, they better watch out. So it's funny, if I tease, if you want to find people who need adrenal support, go to divorce lawyers' office waiting rooms, marriage counselor waiting rooms. It's amazing how often when I just have a person take some adrenal stress and or some adrenal support, their mood suits move out, and all of a sudden their relationship can get much better. So simple things, adrenal glandulars, avoiding sugar would be important, licorice, vitamin B5, vitamin C, simple things. My favorite is called adrenal stress end.
Yeah, actually, I use the very self-same product, adrenal stress end, for our patients with low adrenal function.
Yeah.
Great minds think alike, right?
I guess.
you'll acknowledge that. Okay, so, but you sometimes you reserve the right to actually use a little bit of steroid medication for patients with very low adrenal function. Now, that's highly controversial because, you know, we all know that steroids, that's a big deal. Prednisone's got side effects. What's your take on that?
Well, by definition, a steroid is anything that's cholesterol-based. So the next time you have your omelet, you're having steroids. So we use the term in a way that's almost this boogeyman. And when you step away from that and take a look at what's actually being used, what's the risk, it all depends on the type you're using and the dosing. So if you're using ultra-low dose, I mean very, very, very low dose, bioidentical hydrocortisone or cortisol, at doses up to 15 milligrams a day, which is like 3 milligrams of prednisone, the studies have shown that it's very safe because your body normally makes the equivalent of 35 milligrams a day. So if you're taking 15 and your body doesn't want it, it'll just make a little bit less. The problem is when you go above what your body makes, if you go up to what it makes, it puts your adrenals to sleep, you go higher, it can no longer be less, and you see these horrible, horrible, horrible toxicities. But at the very low doses, if your body needs it, it will use it. If it doesn't, it can ignore it. And it's very, very, very safe. So it took me years of looking through the scientific literature, because my thing was, you know, in medical school, steroids bad, only given life-threatening. And looking at the literature and looking at Professor Jeffrey's work, who is a brilliant endocrinologist, we find that these very, very low doses are very safe, and people who need them can be very helpful.
Right. It can really be a life-changing experience. I've seen that really work well for some of my patients. And, you know, years later, they're doing well and the side effects are, you know, not to be found. So the next initial in the SHINE acronym is I, and that stands for?
Infections and immunity. So we see that the immune system is working very poorly, and there are literally dozens of different infections, or hitchhiker infections, that jump on board that you have trouble clearing when your immune system is not working properly. It's not necessary to chase all of these, but there are some infections, especially Candida, which is yeast, which is a massive, big organism that causes leaky gut at the same time that really overwhelms your immune system. There's no test that I use for it. What I do is I go by basically, do you have chronic nasal congestion, sinusitis, or irritable bowel syndrome? To me, if I see those, I'm going to presume the candida is there and treat it. And frankly, I'll treat everybody with fibromyalgia for presumptive candida.
Right.
So the antifungals I'll recommend will be Diflucan. That's the medication for 6 weeks. But I'll go, there's many natural antifungals and probiotics, but I like probiotics that have a pearl coating that protect against stomach acid. So any of the brands that do that would be fine. They act like little tanks to carry the probiotics past the stomach acid so they don't get killed. And then they melt in the small intestine and release the troops safely to go fight the bad guys. So treating the candida is really important. Many of the other infections, zinc deficiency, very, very important. Virtually everybody with chronic infections and inflammation will be zinc deficient because it causes zinc losses in the urine. And zinc is critical for immune function. More is not better. I'll have them take about 30 milligrams a day for 3 months, and then a good multivitamin will have 15 milligrams of zinc, and that can maintain it.
What's your take on the term popularized, I guess, way back in the 1980s, Epstein-Barr virus? A lot of people with these types of symptoms would show up and say, I've got Epstein-Barr virus. And my retort to them would be that the vast majority of people that we test may show signs of Epstein-Barr virus. It's not clear that that's the culprit. Certainly viruses sometimes cause mischief and chronic aches and pains and debilitation in the body, but it's not clear that there's a viral entity that is the single villain in this saga.
What happened, John, is that we didn't have any tests that they're abnormal. So people checked the IgG antibody for Epstein-Barr virus, and son of a gun, the test was positive. But they didn't know that 95% of healthy people walking down the street would have that test being positive. It just means they had kissing disease by the time they were 20, as most people do, infectious mono. So, but they were grabbing onto that. But there's a test that's abnormal. So although you can see many kinds of viral reactivation, Epstein-Barr, CMV, HHV6, a host of gut viruses, we don't need to chase most of them in most people, because if you get the immune system working properly again, it knows how to knock these infections out. So you don't have to chase. I call it the infection of the month club, because every month somebody comes up with another infection that they say, oh, well, this is more common in CFS and fibro. Well, yeah, the immune system is down, and all of these infections, they're like a pack of dogs jumping on, or hitchhikers jumping on the weakened immune system, and you strengthen the immune system with SHINE, and the body will shake those off really easily. Now, sometimes I will give some added help. There's a small subset of people that will go with antibiotics and antivirals.
People with tick-borne diseases, for example, and there are those individuals who have, you know, for all the world, they look like fibromyalgia patients, chronic fatigue patients, but they may have undiagnosed Lyme disease.
And that's one of the many pieces of the puzzle that need to be looked at. But see, and the thing about Lyme is that there's no test that I consider reliable yet.
Yes.
But I'll go by symptoms, and there are certain symptoms that tell me that an antibiotic trial empirically is warranted, and research shows that people will get better with that. So instead of making the diagnosis of Lyme, which is a whole snake pit politically, I'm going to say that there's a suspected antibiotic-sensitive infection that we're not clear about. We're going to give an empiric trial of antibiotics and see if the person gets better.
Okay, we're up to the N in SHINE, and what does that stand for?
N is nutritional support. That means get rid of the excess sugar. And I'm going to add the three magic words, except for chocolate. I consider chocolate.
Thank goodness you're giving me a reprieve, because my diet is very, very replete with chocolate. I got to admit,
You're a man of good taste. What can I say?
But it's got to be high test chocolate. It's usually 85%.
No, it doesn't. The studies show. I mean, the higher the chocolate, the higher the active phenols and things that are good, the higher the percent. But the studies show even regular day-to-day chocolate. Is much more effective than cholesterol medications at preventing heart attacks. Yeah. So what I say is get the best tasting chocolate you can. Okay. And then go for quality, not quantity. Go for small amounts. But chocolate's a health food. Coffee, tea, these are natural sources that are high in antioxidants and other beneficial things. But the sugar is something that's added to the diet. It's 150 pounds per person per year, 18% of the calories thrown in the diet beyond what's normally in the food. And that's deadly as far as our CFS. It drives the yeast overgrowth crazy, drives your adrenals nuts. So use stevia instead. You can use like Zevia colas or Zevia or stevia sweetened sodas you can find in most health food stores. There's many. So get your pleasure, but it's easy to. I don't have much sugar at all, but I don't deprive myself at all. I have my ice cream because I get the sugar-free ones. I get the chocolates. They have these great sugar-free chocolates that are to die for. And you can go to AbdellahCandies.com, or Russell Stover has a new line of sugar-free chocolate bar kind of things that are insane. Or Rocky Mountain Candy Factory. There's no deprivation here. But people then need to increase water, increase salt. The advice that is given
increase
today,
salt.
Increase salt. The current advice, salt restrict, is deadly for people. Study after study shows people who restrict salt to the government guidelines, it's a very, very good thing because they die quicker and it takes a strain off the Social Security system.
Well, you know, I have to say that the vast majority of my patients have chronic fatigue. They're very nice people. Many of them are women. They're very conscientious. They follow the rules. And so they come in, and they're on an extremely low-sodium diet because they know, because the government has told them this, that sodium kills you. And as a result, their diets are very low in sodium, and they may come in with a blood pressure of, 85 over 60. And I tell them to take more sea salt in their diet.
And exactly, and a good quality salt. I'm partial to the Hawaiian salt because I live here, but any of the good sea salts would be really helpful for people. More water, more salt, high protein diet will feel better. And a good multivitamin. And I like the vitamin powders. The powders, you can take one drink instead of 30, 40, 50 pills a day. The energy revitalization system vitamin powder, my morning energy drink, and what I recommend for anybody who wants more energy.
By the way, some of these products can be found at your website?
They can be found at endfatigue.com, but also in any health food store.
And you have you have another website. They're both great, but they seem distinct. One is endfatigue.com. The other one is vitality101.com. It seems like Vitality 101 has a lot of resources for patients. So they can sort of walk through these like a library of resources on different subjects, and then a little some self-tests and things like that.
Exactly so. I don't like selling products on the same place so I'm giving information, the health information. So the vitality101.com site, that's my site. If you have anything from A to Z, acne to zoster, go on there, just do a search, and it'll pop up and say, here's how to make it go away, using the best of natural and standard medication. My Cures A to Z book, there's an iPhone app, Cures A to Z, about $2 million.
Oh, wow.
Also will have conditions, from A to Z. You look it up, and it says, heart failure, here's what you do for it. Acne, here's what you do for it. It's very simple, short, simple to the point. So this is our way of making, and the iPhone app is free. We were deciding what to charge for it, and my wife and I said, just make it free.
Just put it out there. That's great.
Yeah. And so iPhone, Androids, get the Cures A to Z app. It'll be like having me in your pocket. I'll be your little leprechaun. You can put it on and ask questions, whatever. So the Vitality 101 site has the health information for illness. And then the End Fatigue site is our storefront, but it also has how to maintain health. So how to, keep healthy energy. And we have what's called an energy analysis program where anybody who wants more energy can do the quiz. That's a series of quizzes. If you have lab tests that are preserved, but it'll even analyze those. You just plug the answers in. It'll analyze all of that and tailor a protocol to your individual case, saying, here's the things that you need to do to have your energy go up to a 10, to really feel great. So whether people have chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia or just day-to-day fatigue, it's a nice, simple tool, and it's free as well to help people optimize their energy.
Great. So coming back to nutrition, big controversy among nutrition-oriented physicians these days between the ultra-low-fat vegan-style diet versus diets that are more paleolithic or low-carb or Atkins-like. Where do you situate yourself in that controversy?
Well, Ron, which shoe size do you recommend everybody
wear? Right. Okay,
so
I get it.
What I recommend, I think one of the reasons there's such a wide, diverse variety of foods and things to choose from is because we all have different needs and at different times. I know in my own life, there's times that I'm going vegetarian because I'm doing work that does more, I need to be lighter, so to speak. There's other times I'm doing heavy traveling and lifting and doing 3 lectures a day in a different city each day and on the lecture circuit, and I'm going to eat
diet. Warrior food.
Yeah, and so the way to tell, because I'll see some people coming on a vegan diet and they're healthy as can be, but I see some people who are sick as dogs because that diet's not right for them. So here's what I tell people. I ask people, how's it working out for you, the diet you're having? Mm-hmm. What diet leaves you feeling the best? And I'm not talking about like shooting up heroin and feeling good for 3 hours later, but I'm saying overall, what diet that you eat that you feel the best? And that's the diet that's best for you. And it'll change from person to person, and even for the same person, from one phase of the life to another.
Okay. So let's move on to the final initial in the SHINE protocol, which is exercise. Now, for some people suffering from chronic fatigue syndrome, they can't even contemplate exercise. So what's that all about?
Well, they've got to. Because the problem is, if they exercise too much, they don't have enough energy to condition. So instead of conditioning, they get post-exertional fatigue, and they're bedridden the next day or two.
Mm-hmm. A good question to ask a patient is, how do you feel after exercise if you want to decide if they have chronic fatigue syndrome? Most people feel better. They feel more energized. A patient with chronic fatigue syndrome will be flat on their butts the next day.
Right, if they do too much. So the thing, though, is that makes them afraid to do any, and then they decondition, which is devastating in the disease.
They become phobic.
And, yes, so the key is exercise is able. Begin with a walking program, even if it's just 2 minutes a day, and see how far you can comfortably walk. Now, start the energy revitalization system vitamin powder I talked about is going to be helpful for anybody who wants more energy, but especially in people with chronic fatigue. Even starting with that, and a special nutrient called ribose. Our recent published study, there's 257 different doctors involved, showed that ribose increased energy an average of 61% average after 3 weeks of use. So picture 61% more energy. That's insane. And so my morning energy drink is I do a 5 gram scoop of ribose, and I go ahead and throw in the energy revitalization system powder, stir, add water, stir, and it's the best 30 seconds people spend of the day. And people can find they'll have the energy and also the energy to start exercising. So just start by a minute or two or three or four or 5 minutes a day. Get a pedometer so you get instant feedback. They're $15. They clip on your belt. There's no wires anymore. And you just see how many steps you're walking each day and increase that by 50 steps a day.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't notice it otherwise, but with a pedometer, you get that like a biofeedback machine. Now, for healthy people, you want to aim for 10,000 steps a day, which is 5 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But in people with chronic fatigue syndrome, they may find they get up to 600, now they're 650, and then they're getting up to 1,250 steps a day, and they're seeing the difference. And when you find a level that you can do comfortably without next day fatigue, stay there. If you feel wiped out the next day, rest a couple days, cut back up to 15%, and stay at that level. After 10 weeks on Shine, your energy production will be skyrocketing. In most cases, they'll find they're feeling the energy surging, and then they can continue to increase their walking by, say, a minute a day or 50 steps a day, up to the level that feels to an hour, you can increase intensity and do other sports. So that exercise part is a way to recondition in a way that's healthy. And I'm going to tell most people, again, go out for a walk in the sunshine. I remember when I was a kid, John, my mom and dad would take me to the Museum of Natural History kind of things, and they'd have, like, skulls with holes cut in it, and they'd have signs to say, and the Aztec medicine men would cut holes out to let the evil spirits out, and we'd go, ha, 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 silly Aztecs. And I can picture 50 years from now, we'll have the same thing for modern medicine, you know, be the Medical Hall of Shame.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll walk in, and the first exhibit will be, and AMA doctors used to say, smoke cigarettes. Because the AMA was on the payroll of the big tobacco. Now they're not. They weaned off tobacco. Now they've hooked on drugs instead. But, you know, they say smoke cigarettes, and they show the advertisements. And then the next one would be, and the AMA used to say, don't breastfeed. Only barbarians breastfeed. And we were they nuts? And then I could picture the next exhibit. They'd be the same. And the doctors are telling people, avoid sunshine. And I can see this little kid tugging on his mommy's skirt saying, Mommy, Mommy, were they crazy? And the mother looking down at him and goes, yes, dear.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sunshine's critical. So avoid sunburn, not sunshine.
And which brings up the role of another nutrient that, you know, probably is ubiquitous in its applications to fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue. Talk a little bit about vitamin D, not just from sunlight, but supplemental oral vitamin D.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, Linus Pauling, some people tease that Linus Pauling, he had it close. He was just off by one letter. You know, it's not the vitamin C, but it was the D that's a big, and both are important. Vitamin D is a critical, not just vitamin, but it's a major hormone that's critical for balancing immune function, as well as many other factors, strong bones and a host of things. It's estimated that the current advice to avoid sunshine is triggering vitamin D deficiency epidemics that are contributing to upwards of tens of thousands of deaths a year, many from cancer. Because it kind of balances immune function. Low vitamin D is also associated with increased risk of falling, osteoporosis, broken bones, diabetes,
and pain,
high
to
blood
some
pressure,
extent.
And chronic pain.
Yes.
And we ought to talk about how to get rid of pain for people, because that's big, not just in fibro, but in general. Pain relief is easy if you know what you're doing, but most doctors don't. So the vitamin D, and I recommend a multivitamin have 1,000 to 2,000 units, but I don't like the vitamin D levels, Ron. I don't trust them.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're not reliable. There's too much compartmentalization in different areas of D. And I think some people are chasing levels that they're checking one compartment, and they think it's empty, so they keep flooding it, and it keeps shifting it into these other departments and becomes too much in others. I think it's throwing off immune balance in some people. So more is not better. I like a multi 1 to 2,000 units a day, get some sunshine, and let your body sort it out from there.
Okay. And then, you know, what are some of the other critical nutrients for FMS and CFS patients?
You know, it's funny. People say, which vitamin and mineral do I need? And the answer is all of them. That's why I like the vitamin powder. And the vitamin powder, it has everything they should be getting from the diet from A to Z in optimal levels. And then there's things that are not nutritional deficiencies, but nutrients that the body makes that they need more of. And the key ones would be the ribose. I'll give 5 grams 3 times a day for 3 weeks and then twice a day. For people day to day, you know, one day to day energy, one scoop in the morning is plenty, the 5 grams. I'll give coenzyme Q10, 200 to 400 milligrams a day, especially anybody on a cholesterol medication, which is iffy in most people to begin with, to be taking it, but we'll make them coenzyme Q10 deficient. I will give them acetyl L-carnitine, which virtually everybody with CFS and fibro will be deficient in, 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams a day for 3 months. I will check for iron deficiency, and that doesn't mean a ferritin that's in the lowest 2% of the population. If the ferritin level is under 60, doctors will say normal. If it's over 8, which is insane. The recent study looked at, you know, people, you know, they did the bone marrow aspiration, which is the gold standard for iron deficiency, and a ferritin level of 12 as a cutoff missed about almost 90% of people who had no iron in the bone marrow at all were defined as normal by that test. So the ferritin level needs to be over 60. And that'll help with day-to-day fatigue as well. So those are the key nutrients. I'm also going to give fish oil. Big bunches of pills. Vectomega is a nice one where you take one a day instead of 8 fish oil capsules. It's just very highly absorbed, bioidentical, and it just has the essential fatty acids without the oils. So fish oil, some type of fish oil is critical. Like I said, my favorite is Vectomega. Everybody's got their own favorites.
So, you know, there, you know, we as physicians, we get bombarded by ads in medical journals, and we get visited by pharmaceutical detail people. Conventional remedies. Pardon me?
Isn't it great? They hire cheerleaders to come in and stroke us.
You know, they don't come to see me anymore. They already know that I'm not going to step in. So I'm feeling kind of lonely there. You know, nobody comes by anymore. But they've learned, you know, after nearly 30 years that, you know, I'm just not going to prescribe those. But some of the knockout remedies that have been pitched for fibromyalgia include Lyrica and Neurontin. Could you comment on those?
Well, let's take a look at pain relief. Let's start in general. What is pain? Pain is not an outside invader. It may feel like it, but it's not. It's part of our body's warning light system. So if you have your dashboard in your car, you've got a series of warning lights, and say you have the red flashing oil light. And that's what pain is like. And you can go to your doctor. Most doctors will give you some ibuprofen or an NSAID medication. It's like putting a Band-Aid over the oil light. And you say, yeah, that's a bit better. But then, you know, you get 30,000 deaths a year from these medications. It's not news anymore because year in and year out, 30,000 deaths from ibuprofen type medications. Or you can give something, you can put oil in the car, and then the oil light goes out. So when you have pain, each type of pain is saying that your body needs something different. Like migraines would be saying that you need the magnesium, you need vitamin B2, maybe some CoQ10, you need to look for food allergies, things along those lines. In fibromyalgia, it's shine. There's an energy crisis, you give shine. And in our study, pain decreased by 50% at 3 months. So now you have the medications. We have the three expensive ones, Lyrica, Cymbalta, Savella. They're very, very good because those companies are spending $210 million a year advertising about fibromyalgia to create awareness. Now, in terms of the medications themselves, I could take them or leave them, but the $210 million a year creating awareness in doctors' parts is very helpful, advertising. But the medications, again, they do serve a role, but I prefer going after the cause of the pain first. Interestingly, I don't know if you know this research, Ron, but Dr. Forrest Tennant, one of my favorite pain specialists, did several studies now showing that HCG, the hormone, in people with chronic pain,
that's touted as a weight loss hormone.
Yes, but without giving the diet any rest, and people who are taking an average of about 1,500 to 2,000 milligrams of morphine a day equivalent for the chronic pain, giving the HCG, and it could be sublingual, drops 125 to 500 units sublingual a day, those needed to control their pain by 30%.
Wow, that's exciting.
So we're seeing that in people with a severe, there's all kinds of things. Natural pain relief, there's herbal mixes. There's one called Curamin, which is curcumin, boswellia, DLPA. Now, it's a pain relief miracle for people. It's far more effective than most pain medications. And instead of getting side effects, we get side benefits, like decreased risk of Alzheimer's, decreased risk of cancer, things like that.
There was actually an article about antidepressant effects of curcumin recently, so that's pretty amazing.
Yep, there's a lot of, wonderful side benefits that go with it. Another wonderful mix is end pain, willow bark, boswellia, and cherry. So there's many natural things you can do. And I'll go with a mix of natural and medications, and then that way once everything's in place, then I can wean people off the medications. But again, as you know, the natural things are much more effective, but they have a problem. They're much cheaper and not patentable. And otherwise, if these things were patentable, they'd be multi-billion dollar drugs, but since they're not patentable, you know, the doctor, nobody's going to pay to get the information to the doctors.
Absolutely. Let's, in the remaining couple of minutes we have, let's comment on the use of hormone replacement therapy. We talked about thyroid, we talked about adrenals. For men, do a lot of men who have chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia have deficiencies of testosterone, or conversely, women with these conditions, might they benefit from natural bioidentical hormone replacement?
Yes. 70% of men will be in the lowest 30th percentile on their testosterone in men with CFS and fibro, and I will give them. In the younger men, I'm going to use something called clomiphene to stimulate the body's own production of testosterone. Mm-hmm. Once men are getting into their 50s and beyond, I'll just give the topical testosterone cream. Most doctors don't know, but if you see somebody with a high cholesterol, what does that mean? Well, most doctors mean that their drug reps are going to be very happy and give them a pat on the head for prescribing more statin medications.
Mm-hmm.
Cholesterol being up is a symptom. Symptom of low testosterone or low thyroid. In women, it's often a symptom of low thyroid. When I treat with the testosterone in men, the metabolic syndrome, which is the tendency to diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, those tend to go away. So those things go down, other things come up. And they like the way the testosterone feels, and it helps prolong their life using the bioidentical, but at low dosing. In women with the bioidentical hormones, the way that I tell is I ask, are your fibromyalgia symptoms worse around your cycle? Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about PMS-y stuff, but the fatigue, the brain fog, the headache, the insomnia, if those are worse around their menses, I'm going to give a trial of bioidentical hormones around the menses, because that suggests to me that that drop in estrogen and progesterone around the menses is contributing to their symptoms. But again, I will go with bioidentical. The synthetics have been used historically, poison. I mean, what can I say? But they're profitable poison, and it just could ignore the scientific data and find really high-powered people, you know, the professors on the, you know, of this organization and that, and pay them enough money that they would say salt and sugar are the same thing. They're both white. It's like idiocy. Bioidenticals are much safer, and I'm going with lower and lower doses than I ever have in the past, and finding them to be even more effective with less side effects.
Okay. So, you know, obviously, this is a very comprehensive approach to chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia, and I want to thank you for laying out such a detailed system that patients can access and practitioners can also learn from. To better handle these complex and mysterious ailments, you break it down very well in your books, and the latest one is The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution, and that just came out last month, right? Brand new.
Yeah, just came out, and also today I'm launching the Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Practitioner Network.
Oh, okay.
My goal is to train 500 health practitioners in treating this disease over the next 30 months, and we're creating a referral list so people can find docs. I'd love to have your name on the list. You ready?
Oh, great.
You can place in without having to do the training because you already know this stuff.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to have you be my guest. So
I can be grandfathered into the program.
Absolutely. I'd love to put your name on the list.
Thank
and
you.
It's going to support the practitioners. This way I keep them up to date, and I'll get we're negotiating discounts from the supplement companies because with a large group, we can negotiate those. So it's a very fun thing. So,
yeah, I always learn new things from you, you know, as I read your dispatches. Very valuable stuff. And an upcoming webinar as well, so people can participate in that webinar. Is that for the general public?
There's many of them. I'm not even sure which one. I give a number of them. So if people want to go on my website at endfatigue.com, they can find my lecture thing or just at the Q&A. They can send in questions and even ask for where my next webinar is going to be. So it's going to be in New York lecturing at the 92nd Street Y, but their logistics that came up, so they were putting that to next year.
Oh, okay.
Which is too bad. I like lecturing there.
Yeah, that's a great place. Yeah, I've been there too.
So, but yeah, I'm all over the country lecturing, and on my website there's many lectures that I've given and many talks that people can just find on there and play for themselves.
Great. Okay, so let's mention it once again. Endfatigue.com, that's one, and Vitality101.com.
The Endfatigue is a storefront, so if people want supplements or books or things like that, they can get do the energy analysis program. But for those, if you're looking for information on specific health topics, Vitality101.com.
All right, and absolutely get this book. If you're a patient or if you have a loved one who's suffering from one of these conditions or if you're a practitioner, I know many health practitioners listen to this podcast, The Fatigue and Fibromyalgia Solution is a must read. So thank you very much, Dr. T, for joining us once again. And, we'll hope to invite you back from time to time to provide us with timely updates on the stuff you're doing.
Ron, it's always a pleasure. And can I mention one last quick thing?
Please.
For those of you who have a family member or loved one with Alzheimer's, people diagnosed with Alzheimer's don't have it. And even if they do, well, they get us two near useless medications. But there's just like we have the SHINE protocol for this, there's a dementia protocol, drugs, eyes, ears, you go through, that will give the brain a tune-up and will help most people with dementia to get their minds back. So that could be another fun topic, but just for people to know, all the doctors hear about are the two useless but very profitable medications, but there's much, much, much that can be done to restore function.
That would be Aricept and Nemendia, probably, you're thinking
of. Yeah.
And they don't really work. They don't really work.
Yeah. Well, no. They really raise the bottom line really well. I mean, have you seen
they work in a different way.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, I mean, for people, for the patients.
Right.
Oh, no, they don't work with a damn, in my opinion. So, anyway.
very efficacious, but not in the way we'd like to see.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks very much for joining us and providing us with your unique perspective. As always, Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.